Hi, this is James Altucher. Thank you for listening to Eric Cabral's Entrepreneur Circle.
On this episode,
I have felt wildly uncomfortable in fear, and I still feel wildly uncomfortable in fear at times in my life now. But every time I look back on those times where I've embraced it in the right way, I've become more fulfilled, more just overjoyed. And that's what it's all about.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most happy and humbled host, as usual, Eric Cabral here with a good friend that has a lot to share, a lot to offer in terms of wisdom in everything, either family, business, and life. I just want to say welcome, Adam Hill, to the show, brother.
Thank you, man. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm really looking forward to jamming with you. So for those who don't know, Adam is a CEO. He's an international speaker. He's a transformation coach. He's a world championship qualifying triathlete, a best-selling author of the book Shifting Gears. And last but not least, he is the host of the Flow Over Fear podcast, which I highly recommend you go check out, especially on YouTube. But then again, brother, I'm so happy you're here. I just wanted to share with the audience how I feel and know you. We are in multiple networks together, not just within Brand Builders, but also especially GoBundance. So from what I've learned of you over the years that I've known you is your husband, your father, your family man. You're working in the fourth generation of a family business, which I admire and appreciate as well. But just so glad and blessed to have you here, brother. So happy to get into it with you.
Thanks, man. Well, it's an honor because I've really enjoyed getting to know you, and you've helped me a lot. You and your team at On Air Brands, it's just been, I had no clue how to start this podcast that's behind me, but it was, you know, this year it was the best thing that I've ever done. So thank you for all your support and help doing that. Yeah.
I appreciate the shameless plug, dude. Thank you. That's not typical, but no, yeah, I did not pay him to do that or offer any discounts. Thank you, though. I appreciate
yet,
that, Adam.
But,
yeah. Yeah, there you go. He's gonna get me when the mics and cameras turn off, people. So,
right.
But yeah, I want to get into it with you, brother. Starting with our very first question, in the eureka moment in life or business that caused a major change or pivot for you.
Yeah, and this is one of the greatest blessings in life that I've had a number of eureka moments, and you know, none of them all great, because there were really two pivotal transformational moments in my life, and none of them at the time related to business, but all of them translated into business. The first eureka moment was that I needed to get sober. And that was obviously a challenging time. That was my darkest point in my life, you know, one of my lowest lows. But this beautiful moment looking back of eureka was that I realized in that darkest moment that that even though I was hurt, I was alone, I was afraid, that I needed help, and I leaned into the community for the first time. And that was the first time, that was my eureka moment, because leaning into that community of support was what led me to get sober. And it led me to believe and understand that the communities of support that we have, whether it be Alcoholics Anonymous, Brand Builders, GoBundance, whatever it may be, all help us to level up in our lives in some way, whether it be healing or growth and development. And so that was really the first pivotal eureka moment that I had. And I mean, that translated into everything working in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, brother. And congratulations.
Thanks, man.
I think we're 10 years sober now, at least.
Yeah. 11.
Yeah. Yeah. 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I can't even begin to imagine. I know I've had my demons that I've had to wrestle with as well. And I'm sure I had some addictions, that I probably never admitted to. Actually, I shared that with a GoBro that we had on not too long ago, when he was telling some stories, and it was hitting me that I had done the same. For example, you know, pulling into my driveway in 3 a.m. and not remembering how I got there. Mm-hmm. Ridiculously dangerous, and just blessed nothing happened to anyone. But yes, I can't begin to imagine the road it took, the final time for you, if you wanted to share. That was like, okay, this is my rock bottom. Yeah. And I'm reaching out yeah. Or I have to, or it's over.
Yeah. So I spent, you know, well over a decade of my life drinking to suppress a lot of my fears and my anxiety, you know, hence the name of this show, Flow Over Fear, that I'm on, is that, you know, I was fighting fear for the first 3 decades of my life. I was just battling it. And alcohol was the tool, it was the solution for me. And this is the insidious nature of it for anybody that struggles with addiction or anything like that. You know, there was no indication that I would be an alcoholic. It's really difficult, and it has been really difficult to help people understand, you know, the mind of an alcoholic or the mind of an addict, because that beginning stage, you know, when you start college and nobody in your family say is an addict or an alcoholic, and you grew up with, like, there was always the same 2 beers in the fridge because nobody drank and they were just there for guests. You know, there was nothing in my mind that would indicate that that was going to be a problem. And, but then I had my first drink of alcohol when I was in college, and I remember it just lifted all of my fears away. It worked as a solution for me. It was like, I was social. It was just like this plethora of positive reinforcement for me. And for a while, you know, for long enough, it worked, like long enough to get in my psyche and to become the thing. And you know, it became a part of me. It became a best friend. Over time, it stopped working. Over time, little problems started to creep in, you know, hey, you were a little out of hand last night. Hey, you blacked out last night. You know, hey, that kind of thing. Then, you know, by about my third year of college, I started blacking out more, and it just became problems. And then panic attacks started happening. So my anxiety got worse. And now I was just balancing this life of crippling fear and panic throughout the day to get myself to the drink at night where I could numb it. And that was my life for about a decade or more. And it came to a head, you know, there's a lot of story in there of trying to get sober and failing and trying to do it on my own, all this kind of stuff. But the moment that was the pivotal moment for me was I got behind the wheel of a car. I don't remember getting behind the wheel of a car. So you're kind of similar story to what you just mentioned. The first thing I remember after that was coming to in the back of a police car. My car was totaled. I didn't know what had happened. And I was just kind of left there to think, oh my God. And that was, And for me, drinking and driving, I always hated that. I hated people who drink and drive. It was just like the worst thing I could possibly. And so setting rules for myself, that was always the last rule. That was the one rule I would never break. I mean, things like, hey, don't drink before 5 p.m. Don't drink on weeknights. Don't, you know, stick to wine or beer. All those I would break. But drinking and driving, never. And then I did. And then it realized, I mean, it clicked for me. I mean, in that moment, it was this hopeless, like, you know, really like, I don't belong on this earth, or, you know, I don't know how I could do it. But it was absolute hopelessness. But it was also, you know, on a more logical or rational scale, I was just thinking to myself, wow, this is progressive and I have no control over my life now. I just don't have control. I need help. I can't do this on my own. So that was that pivotal point. Thank God nobody was hurt. Nobody was injured. And the only problems were obviously damage to vehicles, but yeah, that was a moment of grace that still lives with me to this day. So yeah,
and like you said, thank God, you know, you were okay, and everyone else. But it was like a second chance, right? Yes. To realize, like, hey, this could have been worse. Right. Wake up and pay attention to your life. So. Not to take baby steps through the journey beyond that, but what were some of the leapfrog, hallmarks during the chapter of your life to start moving up? Like, and also, I'm guessing, how was this affecting your? Was this during college, or were you in the family business at the time?
I was in the family business. Yeah, so this was about 11 years ago. So I was about 10 years into working with the family business at the time. I was currently directing our customer service department, but I was just not happy in my own skin. I was still, you know, struggling with that anxiety. And I was fighting at the time to operate as a functional alcoholic. You know, I mean, I knew in my head that I had a problem. I mean, you don't drink two bottles of wine in a setting and not, you know, have a problem there. I mean, like on a regular basis. I mean, that's not just like, wow, I got a ham last night. That was like, you know, yeah, every Friday and Saturday, it's like that. But in the business setting, I wanted to force that into being like that I was functioning, that I was operating. So I was going out of my way to make sure that I was doing what I could to work in that and prove it. So it was kind of offsetting it, you know, because I was operating in the business, that was convincing my mind that, well, it's not a problem then, because, you know, I'm still functioning and that's okay. You know, that wasn't an effective or sustainable route to play. Obviously, that was a path to death. So when I finally made that decision to get sober, and this is important for anybody that is struggling, there's throughout that first decade when I was drinking, I always thought, you know, well, this isn't the right time to get sober because things are stressful. You know, I've got this going on. I can't go into treatment. I can't go into that. And then there's this event that happens, this potential catastrophic event that I caused that is leading to legal problems, all sorts of more problems. And now, even though it's seemingly the worst time to get sober, it's the optimal time to get sober. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I want to drive home, is there's never a great, perfect environment. And if it is a great and perfect environment, it's not going to work for you. You just have to do it. Step into the community, take that courageous step. And I'll say it requires courage, because when you're at that cusp or when you're at that threshold, it's scary. It's the scariest thing that you do, to walk into those communities, but it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to imagine some of the things that were potentially happening, and you can expand on these thoughts that I'm having, in that you mentioned that it was your best friend. It was a part of you. You know, it gave you courage, right? You became something, right? I would liken it to, you know, when Superman dons his cape and takes the glasses off. Like, that was it for you. You kind of felt like a different person.
Yes.
And you may have liked or loved this version of you at times. So number one, shedding that, saying that's no longer me, like that's a part of your identity, letting that go and letting it die. But at the same time, like you said, stepping into unfamiliar territory of vulnerability and the fear of, will they accept me? Or I'm like these guys, like who are they? And having a, you know, some judgmental sort of aspects there. Can you expand on sort of that part of your world at the time and what was happening and what it finally acceptance and all the good things that flourished from there?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, stepping into that and when I was, so for about a year of my drinking life, or maybe a matter of months, it was fantastic. I loved it. The first part of college, that was always something. But that put it on a pedestal as the thing I was chasing. So the next 9 or 10 or 12 years or whatever it was that I was drinking was always an attempt to chase that and never get to it, never achieve it, never arrive back at that point. And it was just, you know, numbing at that point. So stepping into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in this case, and I'm not trying to promote it, I'm just, that's my journey. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, that there's something in the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous that says it's like men who have lost their legs, you never grow new ones. So that's like the perfect analogy, because like you lose a leg, you lose a piece of you that was helping you walk, and you have to learn to live again in a certain way. So yeah, going in there, I mean, I didn't relate to anybody. I was scared to talk to people. There was this idea of like getting a sponsor. You know, it's like, I'm socially anxious. How am I going to talk to someone and ask them? It's like asking a girl to prom. It's like, hey, would you be my sponsor and hold me accountable to doing this thing that is wildly uncomfortable for me? It was painfully awkward, but it was just, you know, the pain of the other side of it was so big. You know, I now knew that I had no control over my life. So what else would I do if I was going to get behind the wheel and drive while I was under the influence? What else would I do? So it was like, it was just in between these two fears, and I had to lean into one of them. And I leaned into the one that would help me heal. And there's, you know, there's a big difference that I see. Like you talk about those eureka moments, and I love that concept, because one of the things that I look at as far as fear is concerned and how I've built a healthier relationship with it is, I realize that there's really two ways you experience fear. There's just that you know, oh crap moment, and you know, I don't want to say the other word, but you know, you have that oh crap moment, like oh crap, I'm in a dark alley, and you know, it's scary, and there's nothing there. But there's this other type of fear where excitement joins it in equal measure, where you have this level of like, things can get better if I do this, but it's still scary, and I call that the oh crap moment. You know, it's like something better, something. And it's still scary, but you have to lean into it. Now, we often confuse those two, but if you can recognize and understand when that little difference of excitement or opportunity pop up, that if you can lean into that, that leads to something better.
I love this. I love where you're going with this, because, yeah, I never distinguish the two. In terms of like, there are many forms of fear, right? Fear just sounds, I gotta stay away from that. That's a bad thing.
Right.
Causes stress, anxiety, high blood pressure, whatever. But you're saying that there's actually a moment in time where the fear can now transition to a moment of growth.
Yeah. Right?
And healing, and stepping into the fear means there's something, I forget what Tony Robbins says, but it's always like, when you get past the fear, whatever the thing is, you could probably remember, but, you know, there's, it means growth. It means opportunity. Yeah. It means like there's something else on the other side that's waiting for you. You just have to step through it. When did that finally come to fruition for you when you started to really own this? Because, right, this is your brand now, right?
Yeah.
This is this is everything. So what was your eureka moment realizing I'm going to own this, like stepping into your fear and flow over fear?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, it actually didn't happen in a moment where, like I could look back on it now and realize that there was a moment where I embraced fear. And but it took a lot of digging in and to realize that, and like, you know, through brand builders, through going through the process of really discovering what, you know, the brand is, I knew I had a message to give as far as changing our relationship with fear, but I really had to dissect what it was that changed. And at about a year of sobriety, I had a point of reference in my life, sobriety, where I did the work. I leaned into the fear. I saw the fear and I went anyway, and I got the help I needed. I did what I was told, and And, you know, over a period of months, I finally had a year of sobriety. It was something I never thought that I could do. Never thought that I could do. It was impossible to me. And here I was. It was like this year was such a defining moment, like looking at it from the perspective of somebody with just a few days sober. Now I had it. And looking at that, it was just this point of reference that I could achieve things that I never thought I could. And there were some times like in my life where I'd remembered, you know, watching the Ironman triathlon on television. And when I saw it for the first time, I was still drinking, still, you know, in the midst of my alcoholism. And I remembered like feeling that, oh crap moment where excitement was like, that would be amazing. Wouldn't it be cool if I could do something like that? That would be awesome. And then the fear was like telling me, nah, you can't do that. That's not you. Look at you. You're an alcoholic. You smoke a pack of cigarettes a day. That's not you. Forget about it. But then like with that year of sobriety, it shifted my mindset so that I knew that I was actually taking another evolution with fear. That first evolution was going from fighting it all of the time to facing it where I was healing. Now I had an opportunity to go from facing fear to embracing it. And embracing fear was like, I look at that moment of fear where it's telling me like, you can't do that. That's not you. And then you say, well, why not? Let's dissect, let's get curious about that. And then I find out, well, I'm going to try. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to take one step at a time. So that was, looking back on it, that was a eureka moment of, oh, you know, this idea of facing fear and fear having to be uncomfortable or bad or anything like that. It doesn't have to be that. It can actually be a gift. Fear is a gift. It is signaling that we're pushing up against the edge of our comfort zone. We have the opportunity to grow to become something better. And I'll tell you, every single moment of those fears, whether it be starting to train for an Ironman, you know, standing at the starting line of my first Ironman, or taking over a family business, or dealing with challenges with my kids, or anything like that, every single one of those moments of fear, I can see as a gift now because it's an opportunity to grow.
So good. I'm going to let that one marinate for the audience. It's so good. Looking at fear as a gift. I also think that the saying, you know, fight or flight, you know, that's you fighting, right? That's you stepping through it and like, hey, if I get knocked out or I get killed in this moment, you know, I've made the attempt, right? And I've heard you say this on your show. One of my favorite quotes from you is, and this is a major part of the journey beyond the fear, because like once you get past it, there's more for story to unfold for you. And you say this often, which is with consistency over time, your 80% will be everyone else's 110%. So can you expand on that?
Absolutely. This was a defining moment. So when I first started training for triathlon, I had no clue what I was doing. I had absolutely no idea. And my traditional, you know, exposure to any kind of fitness pursuit whatsoever was like, you know, P90X, or, you know, not to put down P90X, I think it's great, but this idea that we just have to give 110% all the time. And that's like the definition of success that we see. It's like, give your all the time. And that's like how you succeed. But when I started triathlon, I had an injured shoulder. I wasn't able to, like, I knew I wouldn't be able to train like that. So that actually prompted me to type into Google one of the stupidest questions you could ever type into the internet, which is, how do you train easy for an Ironman? And doctor's orders where I had to train easy. So I typed that in, and actually a lot of results came up. And a few of them mentioned this one individual named Phil Maffetone. Phil Maffetone had a philosophy that if you train with heart rate, and you train at about 80% of your maximum heart rate, that is the optimal level where you can start to make incredible improvements, you know, in your training. And he did that with people like Mark Allen, who won the Ironman World Championship. And there's a simple formula. You take 180, you subtract your age, and that would be like your maximum heart rate. That comes out to usually about 80% of your maximum heart rate. So he coached a bunch of people, and a lot of people adopted that philosophy, and they were having incredible success with it in the triathlon world. And so I, you know, took on that philosophy. And the first, you know, part of that was like, I had to slow down a lot. I was going ridiculously slow. I didn't think I was making any impact to my fitness. I was like, I'm not even breaking a sweat. I'm walking most of the time. This isn't doing anything. I'm not feeling the burn like I'm supposed to. What the hell is going on? But over time, with consistency, I mean, here's the thing that it allowed me to do, because I wasn't burning out. I was able to stay consistent. And my pace under that heart rate was improving over time. I was getting faster, until a point where I was, you know, I'd gone from like running a 13-minute mile when I was starting to running like a 7:30-minute mile later in the year. And I was doing that at the same heart rate. So it was like just this eureka moment of, hey, you know, we're being told to give 110% all the time. But but what allows us to stay consistent? What allows us to stay underneath that fear, that panic, that like, you know, that overwhelm is to give 80%. So even when I'm like looking even with my team at work now, when they're, you know, if somebody was to say like, hey, I'm going to give you 110%. I'm like, please don't give me 80%. You know, because over time, if you do that consistently, you're giving yourself a capacity to, you know, have that visualization, to have that rest, to have that recovery, and to perform better. So your 80% becomes somebody else's 110%.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I also liken it to, you know, a long-term goal, a long-term strategy, versus a lot of people who look at something as a short-term thing. And the 110% does sound to me like quick way to burn out, right?
Yeah.
You know, right. in any aspect of life or business, you're going to go all in and then you're going to be all out versus yeah. somebody, you know, it's the turtle and the hare, right? Right? It's just a smarter way to approach, especially within the Ironman. It's like guys like us typically, right, are in Ironman, you know, they're middle-aged, they're, you know, we're going through our thing. And if we're not buying a Ferrari or getting the young hot arm candy or whatever, you know, we're like, we got to do this. Like this yeah. is on my bucket list too, brother.
Like, right, right.
I'm going to have to come to you. I need some guidance. And the 80% thing makes it seem, in my mind, and anyone else who may be listening that ever has ever considered this challenge, it seems achievable, you know, yeah. like, cause it's, can you walk us through, cause I know in your book, you get into some of the details and they're fascinating stories. But can you share some of the experience that you had, you know, either training and then, or enduring?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the first stories were hilarious just because, you know, I had no clue what I was doing. And so I had to learn a lot of this by trial and error. So, you know, if you've ever ridden like a road bike on a trainer or anything like that, you know, I didn't have a road bike. I had an old, you know, $300 mountain bike that was collecting dust in my garage that was about 120 pounds. And so that was my first like bike that I was going to ride for an Ironman. I mean, obviously I bought a triathlon bike before the race, but I ended up, you know, because it was winter and it was cold, even in Southern California, and I was a wuss, I didn't want to go outside when it was cold in California.
66 degrees is cold.
Yeah, right. It was sweater weather.
It's great.
But yeah, it was, but I bought a bike trainer, you know, like just a cheapo, like $50 like thing that I could set up that, and it had a flywheel on the back, you know, that you're supposed to attach to the wheel, but I didn't know that. So I just had this wheel just spinning in the air over the top of it. And like, I wasn't breaking a sweat. I'm like, this is super easy. I'm going like 100 miles an hour. This is going to be totally simple. And then once I attached the flywheel and realized that was the issue, it started making this horrendous noise in my garage that sounded like I was running a chainsaw because of the notched tires. I didn't realize that there were special tires for like a trainer. So these are just like the silly things that you learn. I mean, in addition to having to wear a Speedo for the first time when you're a little overweight and you have hair all over your body.
Why do you have to wear Speedo? Why do you have to wear the whole thing?
You don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to. I mean, you can wear, but the thing, like, it's just like when in Rome, you wanna do as the Romans do. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm gonna wear it. So I ended up actually falling in love with the Speedo, and it became kind of my thing. So I love it.
I'm glad you had your kids, you raised the family already.
Yeah, there's a lot of trauma there from that.
I always imagined that outfit was for aerodynamics. Is that truly okay? And then when you jump in the water too, right? It acts as your scuba gear or keeps you warm, I'm imagining. And
yeah, I mean, there's wetsuits like to keep you warm, but Speedo in particular, I mean, and this is part of the reason why people shave their bodies is, especially in the water, there's so much drag, and just wearing a tight weenie bikini plus shaving your body makes you super hydrodynamic. And even when you're on the bike, like, that kind of stuff makes a bit of a difference.
Out of the three challenges, and forgive me this, what's the order again? I know there's running, there's biking, and there's the swimming. What's the order of that?
Yeah. So it's swimming first, biking, and then running. And the distances in an Ironman are 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and 26.2 mile run. So full marathon. Swimming was definitely the biggest challenge for me.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you. So and that would be for me as well, because I don't consider myself a good swimmer. I mean, I could barely tread water. I could survive, but I couldn't save my kids if they were drowning. Like, hey, I'd tell my wife, who almost qualified for the Olympics. I'm like, you get in there. So help me understand and give me the courage, and anyone else who's listening, whatever it is that they feel is the most challenging and afraid of.
Yeah,
like, for me and for you as well, the swimming portion or any other portions, like, how do you push past it? Like, I could get good at this. I don't need to be great at it. I just need to get through it.
Right. Yeah. So there's, the first thing to realize is that 99% of the people that I talk to, their first response to me when I say that I've done triathlons is, oh, I could never do that, 'cause I don't like the swimming, or I can't do the swimming. So A, you're not alone, and B, anybody getting into triathlon, I would say a good 70% of people in triathlon are not swimmers. They just never have been. They've learned to swim. And the beautiful thing about, like, the Ironman triathlon or triathlon in general is that the swimming portion is the shortest portion. So you can afford to get good enough at swimming, to be good enough at swimming so that you can get to your bike and really work on those techniques. So for me personally, from my experience, I'll share that I have a kind of a framework or philosophy called 80%, 5%. And the 80% we just talked about, that's the 80% rule. The 5% part of it is really like how much past your comfort zone you should consistently strive to push so that you can continue to grow. So for example, my journey to swimming 2.4 miles in the open water ocean in a race
with hundreds began, of people at yeah, the same time.
Yeah, with hundreds of people
kicking, like, you, yeah, and yeah,
beating the crap out of each other. Yeah. That all started with me looking at what was that first 5% in front of me. And that was literally learning to float in a pool. I didn't know how to float in a pool. Mm. I mean, I'd grown up like you said, growing up like swimming, playing in a pool or even in the ocean a little bit, but I never swam any distance. And the thing that prevented me from swimming any amount of distance without sinking like a rock or running out of gas was learning to float. So I was that middle-aged guy in the water wearing a Speedo with tons of body hair, trying to learn to float in a pool. I looked ridiculous, but that was that first 5%. Then the next 5% was swimming 25 yards without stopping. Then the next 5% and so on. So that by the next year, that next 5% was swimming 2.4 miles in the open ocean in a race where I'd be beating the crap out of each other with other people.
Yeah, so I love that. I love the micro steps you took in order to gain confidence to do it. But there's nothing I imagine you could do to prepare you for when you jump in the ocean, because you could train. There's never going to be hundreds and hundreds of people swimming at the same time. Jellyfish, I've heard, can come into play here. What was going on in your mind during that portion when you're like, okay, I trained for this, but this is not anything like I've trained for.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there are some ways you could train for that, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the energy, the number of people and all of that kind of stuff. And really what I tried to do is I just tried to train my brain through visualization. When I don't, when you don't know really what to expect or what, or you know what to expect. I mean, you're going to be amidst a lot of people and there's a chance you'll be. So it's really visualizing that race. And while you're visualizing it, you're kind of feeling that tension or that energy, that anxiety start to come up when, like, you know, you're even in your mind, you're in the midst of all of those people. And then you just practice in the midst of your mind, calming yourself down, breathing, counting, like just counting your strokes, 1, 2, 3. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to be afraid in the moment. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be uncomfortable in the moment. But again, if you embrace that fear, you can start to rise above it. The point is just not to let it overwhelm you so that you get that panic or that sensation, that you allow yourself and you build in the tools to be able to calm yourself down. And a lot of times on the swim in particular, we start off too fast, even though we don't think we're going fast, because adrenaline is pumping through us. And so we don't feel like it's going fast. We just go. And so within 100 yards or so, that's when we start to panic, because that's when our brains start to catch up. It's like, oh crap, you know, this is crazy. So you really have to learn, especially in training, to pace yourself very slowly at the beginning to make sure that you're giving yourself the capacity. So for me, even once I got to the Ironman World Championship, I never liked being in the midst of the melee of the punching and kicking, because again, battling for those few minutes didn't really matter. I was going to beat everybody on the bike or the run. And so what I did was I just held back. I let them beat each other up. I sat behind them all, swam in the clear water, and then I got out and I beat them on the bike.
It's not an exaggeration, is it? I mean, no. It's...
yeah.
Oh, man. That is wild. Yeah, so I love that. I love that advice, because I think it applies to anything, right, in life and business. And I do want to sort of connect the two in terms of all the challenges you faced, you know, as we talked about your sobriety earlier, and then the challenges you faced, you know, in these triathlons, especially within, you know, the legendary Ironman. How did these tools that you've created for yourself in terms, I love the visualization, you know, that's my jam. My wife's all into manifestation, visualization, and all the things. As a lot of people in, you know, in our network, meditation sounds like what you were doing in those moments, even though there was chaos around you. I love this saying, and I'll take this from and give credit to my geeky background of Star Wars. Jean-Luc Picard had said in an episode, and I wrote it down. I'm a teenager. I was like, this is a major saying. I don't know where it's from. Maybe it's Nietzsche or something. But he said, I am an isle of tranquility in a sea of chaos.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, become an isle of tranquility in a sea of chaos. And that's what you were, right? You were kind of just like this calm, zened out. Like even though you were swimming, you were like, you know, sitting in a in a meditation stance with your hand, palms up, I'm guessing. And then the breathing, you know, I love that moment when you're meditating and all you hear is your breath, especially in the water. How have you developed these tools for yourself and use them in life or business, you know, whether it's an argument in, you know, with your wife potentially or somebody in your business? Share some of the ways that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I never argue with my wife, so I don't know.
Yeah, wouldn't either, do I.
that one I just, you know, let her win. That's
exactly. Funny. Yes, but honey, no. You're right.
I've come to really value and you know, with the within GoBundance, we all know how Elrod with the morning you know, the miracle morning kind of thing. I've adopted my own kind of morning method is what I call it, and I there's so much for me, like a lot of the anxiety for me happens in the morning, and I talk about that a lot. Even today it's like I wake up and I'm already anxious, my mind's already going. And so I have to get a handle on that first thing in the morning, because if I don't own my morning, then I don't have any control over the day, right? So that morning part is so important. And that's probably the biggest habit or behavior that I've adopted in my life to basically make sure that I'm that those tools are being imprinted. So in the morning, I do a very rigorous routine, and it usually takes a couple hours for me because it's just that important for me. And it starts with it is kind of a meditation, but I don't meditate well by sitting down quietly because then I'm just in my head. And there's a lot of people like that, that it's just like, well, you can't just sit quietly because all of these thoughts in your head, it's like, yeah, you can try to not attach to them, but there's just like boom, 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 boom. It's not good for us. So I like to do something more active, and that includes breathing. So Wim Hof breathing is the big one I latched onto. It's just so empowering. It helps me to relieve my anxiety. It helps me give me energy, and it just I feel like it's healthy. It just feels healthy to get that breath and to practice breathing. And then I get into a little bit of spiritual reading, the Bible, like or something like that, to really ground in some spiritual nature with prayer and all of that. Then I get into a little bit of exercise, and this. You know, I'll do my bigger exercises later in the day, but I really like to just, you know, get some energy going, whether it be some karate or some push-ups or sit-ups or things like that. I'll do that. I'll then get into my affirmations, which I know a lot of people think that affirmations are kind of like woo-woo, yeah, okay. But I really love like the Tony Robbins approach to affirmations as incantations, where, you know, every time you say them, they're filled with energy and passion, and the language that you use is so powerful. So instead of saying like, yeah, I'm great at doing podcasts, it's like, no, I'm a master storyteller. Mm. You know, I ask quality questions that produce quality answers, kind of things like that. It's just like, you know, I have a list of like 20 or 30 things that I say three times through. And the last time through that I say it, I'm in the cold shower doing it. And I know that's another kind of cliche thing, but wakes me up, gives me energy. And it's just a powerful way to like really imprint those affirmations. So after I do all that, I'm energized. There's no way that I can't be awake after that and feeling good. And then I will do some reading and with some coffee, but this, you know, this whole routine of just doing those few things, I mean, that, and then you could get all that done in like a half hour. That's been like the biggest game changer for me versus grabbing a granola bar and rushing out the door to get to the office to be the slave to the rest of the day.
Yeah, I love it, Dan.
So how that applies to my business, it allows me to be more present. It doesn't take away from the being punched in the face, you know, that you know we get like during the rounds, and we talked, I think, beforehand about, you know, each phase, each day of business being a round of fighting. And I love that, like in a fight. And that morning method gives me an opportunity to really sit down in the rounds and get, like, you know, all of the bruises, everything cleaned up, collect myself, and make sure that I am strong enough to get back in the round for the day.
Mm, yeah, I love that. Yeah, this analogy you and I are going to have to expand on our shows because I think what you're saying is, you know, and you know, Rocky is the most famous movie that people can relate to. So, you know, being in the corner and having Mickey in your corners is your morning method. You know, yes, it's the reset. Right. You know, hey, I got my ass kicked last round. Could have been yesterday. Could have been last year. But that last round, I'm leaving it in the past. I'm learning from it, right? And I'm in my corner, and Mickey is me, and my method is me, and Mickey is the method. Now it's like, catch that chicken rocking. And all of a sudden, I love the, this is like, we can just keep going on this, you know, oh, but then totally. Like, it helps, right? It definitely helps to get back out, stand up, and he pulls the stool away from your ass. And then now you got to get out there and do it again, do it again, and get your ass beat or win, you know?
Yeah.
There's no guarantees, but if you're setting yourself up with a lot of these tools that you're putting into place, it's fantastic, dude. Let's share some of the wins. I know, you know, you have the family business. I know you're building your own thing. You've built your own amazing brand. Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Let's walk through, when did you begin to decide, like, you know, I'm going to have to start creating something that I own, and you know, now it's Flow Over Fear. But yeah, let's talk about some of the methods and strategies you have behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. So so it really started as a triathlon coaching company, and I really enjoy that because I really wanted people to experience the same fulfillment and growth that I did that transformational aspect that I experienced with triathlon. So I wanted to help beginners get into the sport. But what I quickly realized, especially as I start really digging in and really get reflecting on what it was, I realized that it wasn't about triathlon. It was about really whatever our dreams are that we're putting off, that we're pushing out there, that we are telling ourselves that we can't do because of fear. And that's really the root of like all of this fear that I've lived in my life. I didn't have to live as a subject to it or fighting it. I could have embraced it. And that's really where I just kind of that aha moment of I want to help people to recognize that fear can be a gift. And if they're experiencing it at a really heightened level, it's wildly uncomfortable. And there may be ways in which we are unhealthy ways in which we're dealing with it, but that it can be a superpower if we embrace it in the right way. And so that's really what transformed. And I wanted to know the best way in which I could deliver that message and help people with that. And I realized, even through whether coaching or anything like that, I realized that the best formats for that would be through the podcasting medium and through the speaking medium, which are two of the things that I'm building into today with Flow Over Fear and my speaking career. So I help audience to gain some of the tools like 80%, 5%, to help them to revisualize fear, reframe it, and turn it into something more powerful for them.
I love it. When on stage, and anyone who's listening, please, reach out to Adam. If you're interested in hearing his story, what are some of the things that you do share, in terms of the fear, the empowerment, helping them get beyond and past the fear and embrace, just share so someone can hopefully reach out and connect with you on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I do is I have a framework called, that I'm working with called Brave. And, it helps people just to become really everyday brave, and bravery isn't an absence of fears, as you know, but the whole framework is about how we learn to believe in ourselves first. So that's the B, believing in ourselves and understanding that we can actually having that knowledge in our mind that even if we don't quite comprehend how we're going to get to where we want to go, believing that it's possible because we have these points of reference in our life and other people. And then the R is about building that roadmap, is about like looking at those 5% increments that can help us get there and build toward that dream that we have. So whether it be the Ironman World Championship and you don't yet know how to swim, that you can actually stack on 5% on top of each other to get to that point. So building that roadmap. And then the A is taking action on it. You take action on the roadmap that you're taking, that 5% at a time, but with 80% effort. And then the V is that vitality piece. I mean, because regardless of whatever you're trying to pursue, whether it be a business goal or a family goal or a fitness goal or whatever it may be, you're going to need to have the energy, the vitality to do it. So how are we going to build that energy? How are you going to set up a program of health and well-being that gives you energy and doesn't take it away or take away your time? And then, of course, the E is really that embracing fear part. This is where we continue to look at other opportunities as we start to stack on top of each other those achievements and those points of reference, that you continue to look at new ways to embrace fear in your life and just live an amazing life in abundance. Because I can tell you, I have felt wildly uncomfortable in fear, and I still feel wildly uncomfortable in fear at times in my life now. But every time I look back on those times where I've embraced it in the right way, I've become more fulfilled, more just overjoyed. And that's what it's all about. So
I love it. I love it. So repeat the BR, the acronym again. So we have the B.
The B is believing in yourself.
Believe.
Yeah.
The R
is the roadmap.
Roadmap.
The A is taking action.
To action.
And then
B is vitality.
And then the mm-hmm. E is embracing fear.
I love it. So good. I highly recommend anyone out there who is interested in reaching out to Adam so that he could share his life lessons and stories, that some of the things that he shared here. We're going to share his information and it will be in the show notes as well. But I want to get to the last segment, brother, which is my favorite and a lot of the community's favorite as well here, in the segment called Embracing the F Word. And it's not fear, which it could easily be, but embracing the F word meaning failure. So any lessons learned that you could share with us from a failure in the past?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to go back to, you know, my biggest quote unquote failure, which was the, you know, sitting in the back of a jail or sitting in the back of a police car going to jail for a DUI accident. At that very moment, I thought my life was over. I thought I was absolutely hopeless. I thought that there was nothing ever ahead of me. But it taught me the greatest lesson I've ever learned, you know, that comes from failure, that in the midst of hopelessness, there's still hope. Even in the midst of hopelessness, there's still hope. And even if we don't have the faith in that moment, just keep going and lean into that fear. So those are the greatest lessons I've learned.
I love that. And I know you're a faith family type of guy. And I just want to sort of highlight how powerful that is. Because any given moment throughout any normal human existence, you're going to feel hopelessness. But as long as you have the hope, there's going to be some, you need that in order to have faith. And then the faith is what can continue and create consistency and confidence that you can actually get beyond this. But anyway, yeah, I love it, dude. Thank you for sharing those vulnerable moments earlier. To cap everything off in one word, how do you help people?
It's hard to capture it in one word because I want to get those two in there. I'm an overachiever. But I'm just going to say, I'm just going to use that four-letter F word and say fear. And that's how I help people. And it may sound like it's like, oh, you help people fear? No. I help people, you know, redefine that relationship with it. But remember me with fear.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Redefine it. Step into it. Have it work for you instead of against you. Mm-hmm. The majority of people, you know, and I could just think about handfuls and God, you know, just people in my life that have never stepped past it, or just fear of failure alone can prevent people from ever. What's that saying, Adam? Where the cemetery is full of unfulfilled dreams or something those lines.
Yeah,
which is sad, right? People just because of the fear, dude. What will they think of me? Well, what if I fail? What if the list goes on? Just no one ever steps through it. So the one part that I wanted to uncover before we part here, brother, is the flow part, right? We've gone on all in and dissected fear, but explain the flow part before we go.
Yeah. So I believe it's my belief that the opposite of fear is not fearlessness. In fact, fearlessness is the most frightening thing you could think of. I mean, think back to your college days on the most fearless person at the frat party. That dude is scary, right? So fearlessness is not the opposite of fear. My belief is that the opposite of fear is flow, because flow is that experience of actually living with, and as my coach Kirk Wayman would say, is dancing with the fear. It's rising above it. Flow is this idea of rising above it and looking at this fear and learning to live with it and embrace it as something that we can achieve. So I think flow is the act of embracing fear so that we can achieve our greatest results, feel good about it, and enjoy the process, enjoy the journey.
Yeah, I love it. And you know the saying, when you're in flow, man, it's like a God state. Like you're just channeling something. And I'm sure when you're on stage, you feel you're in flow. You're not even thinking, right?
It's just,
it's just like, you know, it's great. It's great. I love it. I love it, dude. I'm getting chills. But
thanks, man.
Thank you so much, brother. Let people know how they can reach out to you and potentially do some work together.
Yeah, so my website is www.adamcliffordhill.com. So I have my middle name in there, and I'm on all the socials at the in Instagram at the Adam C. Hill, and all of the other ones are Adam C. Hill. So find me on Flow Over Fear on YouTube at Adam C. Hill, and on Apple Podcasts, of course.
Love it, love it. Thank you, brother, for your time and your stories. I truly appreciate our friendship, and look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Eric, man. This is awesome. Thanks for all your help, brother.
Anytime, man.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.